Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the program. A big welcome to all of our friends on this Monday, final Monday of February, 27th day of February 2023. I met so many nice people at the Bon Voyage Expo yesterday. A lot of old friends, listeners who've watched me on TV for many years, and they've been loyal listeners to the radio show. And we made some new friends, some new listeners. So if you're one of them that are joining us for the first time, welcome to the radio show. We saw our old friend who is with me in studio today, and I'll formally introduce him in a moment or so, Dr. Don Jorgensen, who is we're kindred spirits when it comes to travel, and I very much appreciate Don coming out, and he was in the audience as Ryan Hansen and I did our thing about travel trends. It's always fun to talk with other travelers, isn't it, Don?
Oh, it never gets old. There's plenty of stories to share and new experiences to talk about.
And they had a tremendous amount of, I mean, everybody in the business was there, all the cruise vendors. I mean, yeah.
It was delightful. I mean, I learned a lot. I travel a lot and still learned a lot about new opportunities, new places folks are going, changes with cruises and travel. It was a very enjoyable event.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that the weather did not discourage folks, because when I woke up yesterday and saw rain and it kind of mixed with snow, I thought, oh boy, nobody's going to want to go out. But actually, the weather broke and turned out to be a great day. Our show broadcasting now in our 13th year with the radio program in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run. Since 1985, Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, and hanging services and hanging systems. Moe's been very busy lately, and he's been out going to people's homes, making sure everything is up on the walls the way you want it. And he's got all the levelers and all the ladders, so you don't have to worry about it. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. This week's Monday one-on-one is with Dr. Don Jorgensen. Don is the governor-elect of Rotary District 5500, which covers more than 50 Rotary clubs.
That's
from,
right.
From Yuma to Douglas and pretty much
all the way south, yeah, and all the way east.
All the way, yep.
Southern Arizona.
Governor-elect Rotary District 5500, and Don is also a volunteer ambassador of something called Shelterbox USA, which is a cutting-edge global charity that delivers emergency shelter for families devastated by natural or man-made disasters. Don Jorgensen is the founder of Jorgensen Healthcare Associates. He is the owner of Human Factor Consulting. Don is a worldwide traveler and author of the 2020 book, Three Worlds, One Voyage, a vivid firsthand account of a small expedition cruise to Antarctica in March of 2020, just as the coronavirus exploded across the globe. And Don, I remember you planned for this trip for years, this Antarctica trip. And then, of course, we all know what happened in February, March. You were probably one of the last people to go through customs when you finally did get home in Miami. And I think the guy at I enjoyed reading your book, and I think the guy at customs said, well, where are you coming from? And you said, Antarctica. And he said, yeah, I think you probably should have stayed there.
That's exactly right.
Let's talk a little bit about service and something you feel really strongly about. How did you come to Rotary?
I came to Rotary because I've always had that desire to be of service and had the opportunity you know, all the way growing up from Cub Scout to Boy Scouts and all that. In my business, I worked helping folks dealing with alcoholism and addiction, mental health, all those issues. And as I had more time, I looked for the opportunity to be of greater service. And it actually tied into our love for travel because, you know, traveling a lot, it's easy just to be a consumer, to go visit, to enjoy the sights, enjoy the people. But Rotary also provided the opportunity to travel for a cause and to be of service to others globally. That's what attracted me to it. Although it's not necessary, there are folks that engage in Rotary and join it because they want to be of service in their own communities. And that's the great thing about Rotary, is that it provides the opportunities for really folks looking for three things: to connect with others in their community, whether it's for business purposes or personal reasons, to essentially make friends and develop really strong what we call fellowship and friendship, and to be of service to others. In fact, Rotary's motto is service above self, and I think that says it all. And it can be done. It takes place, as I said, locally and on communities across the nation and globally, but every individual can choose how they want to be of service. The other point I'll make about this, because as you, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of folks listening, you know, I've been a guest in the past when we had the mm-hmm. political face-off.
Right.
Well, the great thing about Rotary is this is the opposite of that.
Well,
Rotary
that's what
is
I was gonna
non-political.
Ask you. You're a political guy, and yeah. I'm just wondering, is Rotary a politically based organization?
It is exactly the opposite. Okay. It is non-political. It is non-religious. I have good friends in my club who I know are at the opposite end of the spectrum. It doesn't matter, because we are there to engage in that service to others, to help the community, to make a difference in the world, and we do that together. It is, if you're looking for civility in the world, this is a place where you find that as well. And it's keeping up with the times. You mentioned, and thank you, that I'm the incoming district governor. That says yeah. July 1st. Mm-hmm. Right now, our district has the first African-American female governor that we've ever had, Anita mm-hmm. McDonald, who's mm-hmm. doing a terrific job. So a lot of folks think that Rotary is the old boys club type
yeah,
meetings.
Yeah, I mean, old boys getting together having lunch.
Yeah, that's a long time ago, and yeah. I'm happy to say completely out of date. Right now, Rotary International, as you mentioned, we have 1.4 mm-hmm. million members around the world. Our current president is named Jennifer Jones from Canada, a wonderful woman and the first woman president of Rotary International, and there's another one coming in another year. So it has changed. It is diverse. It is representative of our communities, and it is welcoming. There's no initiation. There's no secret ballot. You know, if folks want to engage in service to others and be part of something bigger, this is a great opportunity and an easy way to do it.
I remember as a kid, because my grandfather, God rest his soul, was so active in Rotary, and this was growing up on the North Shore of Chicago. He actually became president of your group, Rotary Chapter Number 1 in Chicago. And so that distinctive Rotary wheel, I'm looking at that logo right now, I remember seeing that as a kid. You know, does that logo have any significance? Is it a wheel or a star or what is it?
It's referred to as a wheel.
Okay.
Because it is, we look at it now, it's about work. It's about doing something, making a difference. And yeah, you've got quite a legacy with mm-hmm. your grandfather yeah. there, because Rotary was founded in Chicago in 1905 by
wow.
Paul Harris. And it was started for a way for businessmen at the time to network, get to know mm-hmm. each other, and then it quickly evolved into being of service in the community. And it started with doing good works in Chicago, very quickly went worldwide, because we all have that need to do it. And our clubs now really make up what Rotary is all about. It starts with the members. It starts with the clubs in the community. And the great thing about that now is that there are many different types of clubs. There are still the what you might call the traditional luncheon clubs. Mm-hmm. We have some great ones in Tucson, but there are some that meet at breakfast. There are some that don't meet for meals at all. They
really?
May have happy hours mm-hmm. or just meet on Saturdays before they go out and engage in their service projects.
Mm-hmm. And service projects vary a lot, I'm sure.
We have all kinds of projects going on.
Environmental work.
That's a big area. It's the newest area of focus for Rotary, and it's been so successful and of such interest that even in Tucson, we have a club that just focuses on that. They're what we call a cause-based club, Tucson Verde Club. All their projects are environmentally based, and many other clubs come in and partner with them. In fact, we have a great project coming up on Saturday, March 4th, is a Rito River cleanup. It's the second time we're doing that. We've got a number of clubs come together, and folks who are not Rotarians coming and joining us to help clean up the river. And if folks are interested in that, they can go to our website or they can give me a call. I'd be happy to give out my number at the end here.
Okay.
Because it's a way to get involved.
It is our Monday one-on-one. Dr. Don Jorgensen joining us. We'll talk a little bit more about Rotary. He is the District 5500 governor-elect. Then I want to talk about his other work he's doing with Shelterbox when we continue with the Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe and his team believe in lots of great dialogue, and that's what we hope we present right here. All right, Mona's Danish Bakery. Mona's located northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. They had another very busy weekend. They are open 6:30 on Tuesday through Saturday, 7 o'clock Sunday morning. My advice, get there early, especially on the weekend. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. They are closed on Monday. They deserve a great day off after a very busy weekend. So check it out, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, and again, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. More with the Monday one-on-one right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona, all made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is The Buckmaster Show and the Monday One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, conveniently located Midtown, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen. Moe'sGallery.com, their great website, where they're now doing e-commerce. Really nice stuff on the website for sale. Our Monday one-on-one today, our friend Dr. Don Jorgensen is here. What a busy guy Don is. Governor-elect of Rotary District 5500, which is basically all the Rotary clubs, several dozen, 50, more than 50 in Southern Arizona. And he's also volunteer ambassador for Shelterbox USA, which we'll talk about in a moment. But Rotary, before we move on from Rotary, you had a quick Rotary story you wanted to share with our listeners, Don.
Well, several years ago, my wife and I were driving across this long, dusty highway through the middle of Zimbabwe with two friends of ours.
Oh.
We were being driven by a local couple named Bryson and Grace who were taking us to a project, a Rotary project, to help build a school near Victoria Falls.
Mm.
So as we're driving across, the national police showed up and stopped the van. They pulled Bryson out of the van and they accused him of operating a tour business without a license.
Oh, no.
Well, Bryson looked at them and looked at us and said, "No, this is my family." Well, the national police, they look at Bryson and Grace and their beautiful dark African faces, and they look at our white faces and say, "No way."
Yeah.
But the thing is, Bill, Bryson was telling the truth.
Yeah.
Because several years earlier, he had been our tour guide when we went for the first time to Victoria Falls on another project. We were so impressed with him, we made a deal. We say, "Join Rotary, help develop other projects in the area, and we will pay for his college degree."
Wow. That is family.
Well, all that happened. And so he literally calls me his brother, and I call him mine.
Mm.
So the national police heard this story, and 5 minutes later, they smiled and waved
you
and
on your way.
Sent us on our way.
That's a great story.
But to me, that's kind of the secret, the gift of Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talked about service above self and how great that is, and I'm making friends and becoming close with folks. But to me, it was something more. And what I realize Rotary does is add greater value to my own life by allowing me and my fellow Rotarians to engage in service, whether it's across the world or across the street. And that's what's so great, is that it adds something that I know a lot of folks now, whether they're retired or they're looking to add more to their life in terms of service to others, can find in Rotary.
And you have another project that's called Shelterbox. How did that come about, the Shelterbox Association?
Well, the cool thing about that, again, Shelterbox was started by a Rotary Club in Cornwall, England in 2000. It was just a project of a club.
Mm-hmm.
They recognized that folks were suffering around the world after natural or man-made disaster. Think of Turkey and Syria. We'll talk about that. The earthquakes wiped out people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that became so successful, it's blossomed, it's spun off into its own large nonprofit organization worldwide. And in the 20 years, it has now been twice nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. It is that successful. Last year, for example, Shelterbox, we responded in 10 countries to natural or man-made disasters and provided aid to over 400,000 people. Because folks ask us, we are in Ukraine. We have been in Ukraine for a year, engaged in different projects, providing supplies that folks need. It's called Shelter Box because originally the box contained a full tent that would support up to a family. It provides water filtration. It provides mosquito netting, depending on where they are, blankets, cooking equipment, solar lighting, everything that a family would need to survive. And the difference with ShelterBox is we work with Rotary districts in wherever the region is to identify the most vulnerable families, and we deliver the aid directly to those families. There's no middleman and all that. So when folks donate, most of their funds are going to direct aid.
So just like Rotary being nonpartisan, ShelterBox, I assume, is the same way.
Exactly the same. Exactly the same. We are focused on getting the help to where it's needed. We work with the UN. We work with other disaster organizations like the Red Cross internationally so that it's coordinated. But we're known as the folks that go the last mile to provide the shelter where a lot of other organizations can't get to.
How did you hear about them?
Through Rotary, through a conference where there was a presentation, and I went to them and said, what do you need? How can I help? And they have folks. The folks that go to the different countries are all volunteers. I looked at that, but that wasn't as possible with my schedule. So they needed folks in the U.S. to help promote ShelterBox, to spread the word, to educate folks about it. And I was happy to do it and still do.
Because we talked a little bit about Rotary is expanding to an environmental concern. We even have the Tanque Verde Club, as you mentioned. Tucson Verde is very much involved in the environment. Also, peace and conflict resolution. People may not think about Rotary as trying to solve big problems that involve major conflict.
It's, again, one of our key areas of focus. In many ways, we support peace scholars that go to different universities around the world and then engage in conflict resolution projects within countries, sometimes between countries. And it can even come down to, again, local areas of focus. The Marana Rotary Club on April 15th is sponsoring a human trafficking forum that's free to anyone that wants to attend. So if they're interested, go to maranarotary.org. But it's to highlight the human trafficking that's taking place even in our community, what folks need to know about it, what folks can do about it, which again relates to kind of bringing peace between people in the world. There are other activities involving all kinds of efforts there dealing with peace, as also efforts dealing with disease prevention. You had mentioned, as we were talking off the air, meeting the General Secretary from Rotary who comes down every year for the El Tour de Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
Within that is Rotary's Ride to End Polio, because mm-hmm. Polio Plus.
Polio eradication, he's talked to us over the years that has been a hugely successful effort. I think Pakistan and a couple, maybe Afghanistan are the two kind of holdout places where polio is still rearing its ugly head.
When Rotary started in this process 35 years ago, there were over 100 countries where polio was endemic. Now it is down to those two because of that effort. So again, whether it's Rotary or ShelterBox, folks can have an impact if they want to get involved.
You mentioned that your own service began as a Cub Scout, and I'm wondering, it's almost like some people have this gene, this public service gene, where they really do want to serve. But, you know, I think you would like to appeal to people that maybe have just retired, and they're looking for something to do, quite honestly, and they want to test the water.
That's very true. There's I'll come back to that. There's also another group that I'm really excited about, and that's younger people.
Okay.
Folks,
yeah, I was
going to
ask you about
school,
how college. Are your demographics looking?
Well, they're getting younger. That's the good news.
Yeah.
An example is at the U of A, there's a club called the Rotaract Club, which is a Rotary club. And they are very active. I mean, they put some of our older Rotary clubs to shame. But there's opportunities at any level for folks to get involved. But we're seeing that commitment, and that's what's so exciting. But as you mentioned, I hear that with a lot of folks that I know that are, they have more time now, whether they're retired or just semi-retired. Mm-hmm. They're not working as hard or full-time or consumed, or their kids are out of the home. And now they have the time to devote toward the community, to engaging in service. And it's a perfect time and a perfect opportunity to get involved with a Rotary Club, to look for those areas where they have an interest. And it may not be the environment. It may not be peace. It may be education and literacy. And we have dozens of clubs who focus on that area, whether it's bringing dictionaries to schools or helping build schools, or we have a couple of clubs bringing desks down to Nogales where they're needed. It's an ongoing place where that opportunity is always there to make a difference in the lives of others.
How about more information?
Two ways. You can go to our district website, which is rotaryd5500.org, or you can call me directly, and I'd be happy to answer questions and help direct you at 520-906-9148. If you go online and look up Rotary, you'll find us.
Well, you're into all sorts of wonderful things, Dr. Don Jorgensen. We very much appreciate it. And you do hear a lot of older people who have retired saying, well, now I can start traveling and, you know, I can devote looking at different trips. Well, you can't travel 365. I guess you could travel 365 days a year, but you do need something to fill your calendar.
Well, you do. And we have a lot of members who are snowbirds that live mm-hmm. elsewhere, that come here, and they're in a club while they're here. That's great. Everyone is welcome. Everyone has a chance to make a difference.
All right. Our Monday one-on-one. Thank you very much, Dr. Don Jorgensen.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
The one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. We'll take a break right here. More on The Buckmaster Show right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, great time now to start thinking about spring. I know the weather's been kind of weird, and it feels like kind of winter continuing on, but spring is right around the corner. Check out Green Things. They're at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site. Home also to Zocalo and some beautiful merchandise, the Talavera Pottery. Really, they've got the largest selection in Arizona of Talavera. Check it out, Zocalo Village. It's greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They are open daily, Green Things, in their 53rd year of business. It's time to welcome back to the program Fulbright Scholar Albrecht Clausen, University Distinguished Professor, Director of Outreach in the Department of German Studies at the University of Arizona. Of course, Dr. Clausen, a regular contributor to our program. He has a broad range of research interests covering history of medieval and early modern German and European literature and culture, spanning really about a 1,000-year period ending in 1800. He's involved in contemporary literature, writing, poetry, and prose. He's published hundreds of scholarly articles and book citations, translations, textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. He's won many awards. He's the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions in recognition of outstanding service to German studies. Dr. Clausen sits on the 5-member board of the Arizona Humanities. He's also the editor-in-chief of the international online journal titled Humanities. His most recent books include Wisdom from the Middle Ages and The Secret in Medieval Literature, an alternative world in the Middle Ages. Dr. Clausen, always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you so much, Bill. And I'm always happy to be on the show. Thank you.
You've just got so many things going on, as usual. You're also preparing for the early book lecture. What's that about?
So about 20 years ago, I realized that the University of Arizona has a marvelous collection of medieval manuscripts, often as facsimiles, incunabula, that means early modern prints, and early modern prints, including Shakespeare and so forth. And we decided then at that point, or it was rather me myself, to organize early book lecture series, bringing out individual items, showing them to the public, introducing them, explaining why they're so important, why we even have them, what to do with them, and what value they have aesthetically, philosophically, but also technically and medically, whatever you want to take. So this is a public event, and the public is invited. It will be in the library, I think room 315, but that will be announced in a week or so.
At the University of Arizona Library. So we don't maybe have the specific room, but it will be in the library.
That's right.
And are you the lead-off lecturer?
I am the lead-off lecturer, and I will talk about a very interesting manuscript from about 1405, in which we find the most amazing technology, engineering marvels. The whole thing is myth-busting. Basically, we're trying to show that much of our understanding of the past are the sort of very darling images we have today. So it's recently.
That is April the 4th?
April the 4th. That's
Do you know
right.
the time?
There will be 6 o'clock, yes.
6 o'clock at the University Library. Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about these early manuscripts, are these in some cases the real deal, original pieces, or are they facsimiles, or what?
We do not have many real manuscripts.
But we do have some, huh?
We have some. We have quite a lot of incunabula, that means printed books between 1450 and 1500, and then lots of early modern books printed between 1500 and 1800 or so. But we have a huge collection of facsimiles, so they give you the perfect image of a medieval manuscript in all of its splendor and color, and you have a much better chance to look through a facsimile than if you try to go to Europe and to one of those libraries, and they would say, no, you're not allowed to, but here you can.
I want to talk a little bit about Fulbright scholars. I was very surprised to read that article in the Arizona Daily Star. I did not realize the University of Arizona has been so heavily involved in the Fulbright Scholar Program. In fact, a new record at the university, a total of 17 faculty and researchers at the university received awards, making the school the top producer of Fulbright scholars now in the United States, tied with Pennsylvania State University. Of course, you are one of those 17. Mm-hmm. Why do you think the University of Arizona has been such fertile ground, Dr. Claussen, for the Fulbright Scholar Program? And we might explain what this program is. It was founded right after World War II. What is a Fulbright Scholar Program?
Fulbright established this huge grant opportunity for three different categories of researchers and scholars and teachers. One would be just teaching. The other one would be research and teaching. And the third one is sort of the fine arts. So in my case, it was a combination, which is perfect for me because I love both research and teaching. And in a way, I would say academic Peace Corps work. And we have a lot of interest in both areas at our university. And I was actually sponsored by two former Fulbrighters who provided letters of recommendation.
Is that how it works? There's a recommendation process?
You need to have letters of recommendation. I needed to write a good proposal, project, and they gave me a lot of advice. We do have also a person in charge of the Fulbright program looking over the application, really working toward the goal that this is an investment on both sides.
I like the analogy, Dr. Claussen, about the Peace Corps, because you are sent overseas with these programs, and your particular mission, mm-hmm. if you will, you wound up in Cairo.
Yeah.
How did all that happen?
kind of surprising, since I'm a Germanist, and I'm working with medieval German or European literature. But it turned out to be an absolutely smashing success, at least for me, because there were these students, many different classes where I talked or where I gave presentations or seminars which I led. And these were students who were just hungry for really good teaching, for solid academic education. Not that I want to say anything negative about my colleagues, but they're living in their own world. And I came from the outside and with very high standards of good teaching. After all, I got a lot of awards for teaching because I'm such a committed person.
You pride yourself on being a teacher.
I love it. And I think actually in terms, it's so ironic, I'm a medievalist, but I'm really thinking of the future because this is the young generation. And if I can inspire them and give them direction and power to express themselves, understand the history, then they will lead us in the future.
You went to Cairo University, and the project that you came up with, this was a connection to Germany? A connection with Germany going back, I think, to the middle of the 14th century.
Well, it's one of these typical myths. We think about the past as being very parochial, very narrow-minded. And my newest book will deal with globalism in the Middle Ages, in which we have lots of different articles and dealing with connections, you would not believe it, between China and England and France in the 13th century.
Yeah, I mean, just bringing the topic up of your new book, talking about globalism in the Middle Ages, and I'm going, really? There was globalism?
Yes.
Because the myth would be that in the Middle Ages, nobody went beyond their village or maybe the next village
exactly.
over the hill.
Yes. So it's myth. Yeah. Now, the myths are nice and easier to deal with than historical reality. Take economics. Of course, you had traders all over the world. Chinese products were brought into Persia, from Persia to the Black Sea, from the Black Sea to Constantinople, today Istanbul, from there then, of course, to Venice, from Venice to Nuremberg and Flanders, and then London, from there all the way back, or connection to Russia. We have all kinds of travelers, diplomats, artists, architects, medical researchers.
Who would have thought?
It's amazing. And the more we dig into the material, the more exciting it really gets because we suddenly see a very, very dense network of people exchanging ideas, of course fighting a lot, that's very natural, but trading and learning from each other. So that is really helping us to shed this myth of the Middle Ages as being so local, so parochial, so limited in their worldview.
Mm-hmm. And before we take the break, what about your teaching? What were you teaching? I mentioned this this kind of anonymous writer that you discovered from Germany that went and lived in Cairo in the middle of the 14th century and produced a detailed text about the Muslim world.
One fascinating aspect was that I taught my students certain literary texts that addressed fundamental issues, namely courtly love. So the connection between both genders or whatever, you know, homosexual things, that I couldn't address that. And that. But we realized very quickly we are dealing with universal values and young people's need to understand the discussion about love, for example, or death, or God, or foreigners, or other many, or the environment, and so forth. So it's very important suddenly to build connections so that these Egyptian students suddenly, and my colleagues too, realized that they had much in common and shared with me, or me with them. So we are really doing global networking in teaching. So.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. We'll have more with Dr. Albrecht Clausen talking about his Fulbright research and teaching over in Cairo. We'll take a break right here. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Start your planning now. Only about a three-hour drive over to Silver City. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find all sorts of information about some great outdoor activities, including once the rain passes through the area, maybe we can keep our fingers crossed that we'll be getting a little bit of dry weather to do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness over there in Silver City. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org. We resume now with our conversation with Dr. Albrecht Claassen, Fulbright Scholar, University Distinguished Professor, Director of Outreach in the Department of German Studies at the University of Arizona. And Dr. Claassen, I want to mention that our friends over at the Division for Late Medieval and Reformation Studies, and they have a very good department at the university in that area.
They were founded by Augustine Obermann.
Dr. Obermann.
Yes, a major Dutch Reformation scholar who was recruited from Tubing in Germany, I think primarily because of his wife who had asthma. So he needed...
Oh, asthma.
Yes. Yeah, so they gave him, hence, a whole program.
Yeah.
And he established then the entire field of early modern theologians and historians, art historians.
Wow.
So 15th, 16th centuries. So
I was just reading a book that cited Dr. Obermann for his research in anti-Semitism.
Yes.
I mean, he's like the world authority on anti-Semitism. I was fortunate enough. He's gone now. He's the late Dr. Obermann, but I did have the pleasure a couple of times in my television show, Arizona Illustrated, to interview him. What a great guy. But anyway, the 36th annual Town and Gown Lecture, this is their big event for the Division of Late Medieval and Reformation Studies. They're bringing in a professor emeritus of history from the University of Miami, Mary Lindemann, and Dr. Claassen. She'll be speaking about the topic is Water Worlds, an alternative history of Brandenburg, Prussia in the 17th century.
So you have obviously the idea that the state, mercantilist state, both in Austria, Prussia, and France and other places, begin to centrally organize their countries. And so canals become very important modes of logistical connections. So waterways means new trade and means connections between various countries. So the government, the king, organizing these new logistical networks.
Prussia, didn't some of the Prussians actually fight in the Revolutionary War?
At least some of the generals, like Steuben. But since I'm originally from Hessen, the state of Hessen, it is much more for me more important to remind you that the Hessian soldiers came to this country.
Were they fighting for the British?
They were paid for by the British to fight. They were kind of mercenaries. But there was a lot of political propaganda, so the Americans tried to depict them as slaves, poorly abused military slaves, when they were well paid and were just simply serving as battalions. And many of them then stayed in this country, particularly in Virginia, for example. And many of the officers, the German Hessian officers, were very good friends with our third president, Thomas Jefferson. I lived there, so I remember quite
well. So there's a Hessian community, some Hessian communities over on the East Coast.
In a way, you could say.
Okay. Anyway, but getting back to the lecture, it will be tomorrow. It's open to the public, 7 to 8:30, and that will be in the Environmental and Natural Resources Building. And can you describe for our listeners where that is, Dr. Claussen?
This is a really remarkable building. It is located just a little bit east of Park. It is south of BioWest, and it is on 6th Street. For example, Fairwheel Bikes is on the other side. It has all this very rusted, swerving outside building. There is parking on the east side. There's a parking garage further east of that, so people can come and park easily. That should be
all
no
right.
problem.
That should be a good event. Yes. We've only got about 5 minutes left. There's a new book out that's getting a lot of publicity and a lot of buzz. The Wall Street Journal and their weekend edition had it recently. The title, at least the headline, was "The Middle Ages Were Cleaner Than We Think." This is a professor of history at the London School of Economics has written this book, "The Once and Future: Sex, Going Medieval on Women's Roles in Society." This is kind of an area that you have written about before.
Well, this is one of those books where the author just simply capitalizes on recent and solid research and dramatizes these things. I have not read the whole thing yet. I only read a little bit online, but it's, I don't want to say stealing information, but very much copying what the really solid research has done. I did a book just about 3 years ago, Bodily and Spiritual Hygiene in the Middle Ages and Early Modern Age, where we discuss at length from many different perspectives the concept of cleanliness, hygiene, medical treatment, bathing, and so forth. We're suffering again from a major myth, which we have.
This was a major book that you did on this very same topic three years ago, and now this book's getting all this buzz. But the bottom line is, it's another one of those myths, about the Middle Ages being this filthy time.
Absolutely. Of course you had filthy people, and of course you had clean people. It's just like today. You have some people really place a lot of emphasis on hygiene, others not. So one has to be very careful in what you take as your evidence.
And before we let you go, we do want to mention again something you work on. This is kind of your big project, that early literature project. Mm-hmm. Again, that's going to be April 4th, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I will initiate or launch the early book lecture series. It's now about 20 years in going, and I will start again. We will have three lectures every Tuesday at 6 p.m., and I will introduce Konrad Kierser. His book is called Belly Fortis, where you see, for example, a beautiful image of a bathhouse. So even there, so that defies the whole point. And at the same time, this guy has the first image of a chastity belt. And that's a whole book I wrote in 2007 demonstrating how much that is also a myth. But it's a joke. It's a male joke, a typical male joke. So, but ever since it took off and became extremely popular, and we still rely on that very much today. Oh, the poor women in the Middle Ages, they had to suffer from chastity belts.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
It was like this myth that all the women wore chastity belts.
And every blacksmith can duplicate the key and make it accessible, hence, for the lover. It's ridiculous. You know, it's really ridiculous, but extremely effective myth, just like modern politics. The more stupid it is, the more black and white it is, the more effective it is. People don't want to have truth. People want to have stories. And we as scholars try to fight against this myth formation.
How can people find out more about your online journal, Humanities?
Oh, very easy. You just go Humanities Journal and you find it. We have this now in work maybe about 12 years or something like that. And it's a global enterprise. We're bringing together lots of different scholars in different fields. We're working on many different topics correlated.
And it's accessible to everybody.
Absolutely. It's completely free, access free. Only the contributors have to pay. But for the audience, it's all free.
Mm-hmm. And all of your books, by the way, if anybody wants to find out, and there's a ton of your books, just go to Amazon and just do a search about Dr. Albrecht Clausen, and they'll all come up there. And they are, most of your books are available.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Dr. Clausen, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill, for your kind invitation. I always enjoy being here.
We'll look forward to seeing you in a month or so.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of the professor and John, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Thank you for spending your lunch hour with us, and we'll be back. Do it all again in about 23 hours. Have a great afternoon.